As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to Rates and Barrels. It's Friday, December 18th, 2020. Derek Van Riper, Eno Saris, Britt Giroli here with you on this Friday for what is scheduled to be our last Rates and Barrels of 2020. Failing some sort of very interesting trade or massive free agent signings, we are going to enjoy a little bit of rest before coming back at it in full force the first week of January. Beginning the show, how are you guys doing? How is everybody feeling as this year finally winds to a close? Britt, what have you been up to?
Well, I've been up to going to the food bank, the Maryland food bank. I went this morning before we sat down here for this podcast. I've been learning Spanish. Those are like my two kind of productive quarantine things that I've been doing. Other than that, I've been trying to not annoying my husband because the two of us have never spent this much time around each other. And if you're listening to this podcast, you're in the same situation, send me tips because it's been a real interesting dynamic to share a townhome, share an office space, and be constantly on top of each other. It's definitely, I love him, but not that much.
From you like know, zero to 60, like, screw that. It's like zero to 100.
Yeah, it's like I was a baseball beat writer, used to traveling, see you every 10 days. Yeah. Now it's like breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Like, crazy. He doesn't listen to this podcast, thank God, so he'll never know this happened.
Your husband, my family, they don't listen to the shows.
Yeah, my mom just listens to the beginning. So hi, mom. I think that one of the keys is, and I don't know if you have enough space for this, is just to have time by yourself in your own space. So I like that. I've seen different backdrops for you, so I do know that you move around a little bit. So work in the kitchen one day or something, or work, you know, I don't know how many rooms you have, so like just be like, today's a bedroom work day, you know, and you get out.
Yeah, leave me alone.
Yeah,
I think an outside hobby is the secret to not going stir crazy at the end of all of this, right? We're nearing the end. It feels like we're getting closer to what could be at least a partially normal 2021. And being inside this long, this much, is so different. Whether you travel as often as Britt does for her job, or whether you're home all the time anyway, like finding new healthy habits, because the things that used to get me out of the house, I'd play soccer, or I'd go play pickleball, or I'd go do something with other people. Ultimate Frisbee a few summers ago, right? There was sort of team social gathering things that, even though it wasn't really about playing those things as much as it was about just getting out of the house, like those are gone. And doing those things on Zoom, or the equivalent of those things on Zoom, is horrible. I have come to the point where I actually dread using Zoom outside of work. When it all started, being able to see friends and family on Zoom was like, well, this is nice. At least we can still do this. Now it's just like, forget it. Like I've got screen fatigue and it's just as bad as it's ever been. But yeah, if you don't have a lot of space and you're in a new relationship, that'd be really bad. So I think think Eno's right. I think changing your location within the townhouse is key, but an outside hobby, like just walking.
Yeah, running has been that for me. The, you know, I got to my 500 mile, you know, number that I wanted to hit. It's time without screens, it's time outside, it's time by myself, and that's been really helpful. But you know, we said, you know, during the summer that we would do these spotlights, and I think that we should take this opportunity because it is a season of giving, it's a season of the time to give. And you know, for me, I've struggled with this idea that like there's so many people in need and there seems to be so many different ways to give, and so my response have been somewhat very to try and be very targeted and specific, and so I've done more kind of like GoFundMe and sort of specific fundraiser giving this year than I ever have, where you know, like my uncle, his house burned down in the fires, so like, you know, help start a GoFundMe and help create some interest around it, and gave to it myself. And then, you know, Jen Mac Ramos had the unfortunate accident, I helped try to boost the signal on that and gave to it. So there was, you know, there are these. that was, I mean, I characterize it as unfortunate accident. She was run over by a drunk driver, so it's much worse than that. But you know, these specific ways I felt like I can make a bunch of impact, but I think we should put a spotlight on sort of more general stuff because, you know, I'm looking at the stat here that says nearly 8 million Americans have fallen into poverty since the summer. And that's from the Washington Post. And it seems like it's a number that, is agreed upon from different media outlets. And that's an amazing number. That's a lot of people. And just wanted to give Britt a chance to talk about hers in specific, and then maybe we can give people an idea of how to give to those kind of, because you know, as much as it is helpful for me to like try to help people specifically, like one on one, like there are reasons these bigger things exist. There are reasons that they're these bigger organizations, they can help more people. So like Britt, like, when you're volunteering, like, what do you do, and what's the name of your food bank?
Yeah, so it's the Maryland Food Bank, and I just started this month, and I agree with you, you know, it's like the GoFundMes and stuff are great, but you end up in that bubble of people you know or friends of friends where it comes mm-hmm. across your feed. What's nice about this is you're giving a few hours, you sign up, and I've boxed up dinners, I've boxed up lunches, it's all socially distant and masked. They do play some Christmas music. You see people like from a distance, so you kind of feel like you're around people. For me, I've left my house, which, as I mentioned in the intro, is absolutely key. and then you feel like you've done something. I mean, what struck me during the intro video, my first day, was they said that they've already hit double the output. So there is twice as many, at least, people in need that need healthy food, that don't know where their next meal is coming from. And if you think about that, that's staggering. They said the number was initially 1 in 10 people in the state of Maryland didn't know. They think that is more closer to 2 or 3 out of every 10 Jeez. People now in the state of Maryland, yes, that do not know where their next meal is coming from. So what's cool about the food bank is there are food banks, I'm sure, everywhere. And they place an emphasis on healthy food. Today we did like turkey wraps with cheese. That came with a side of celery and a little ranch and then peaches. So it's not just giving you cheap food that's junk food. It's also teaching people to eat healthy, which I think is also important, right, to help combat some other issues we have in society.
How did you find that? Because I found a thing here called feedingamerica.org where you can search by zip code. And, you know, that's either if you need food or, but also I think it could be an interesting way to find somewhere where you can you could volunteer. How did you find your spot?
So you can kind of search like food banks or charities near me. Mm-hmm. And we got lucky in that the Maryland Food Bank is 5 miles away. A friend of mine who covers the Orioles, his fiance actually works at the Maryland Food Bank. So I had texted her when I saw the volunteer page. A lot of the volunteer pages are waitlisted, but because of COVID, a lot of times they said that people don't show up or they cycle through. So especially now around the holidays, if you're looking, don't get deterred, I guess, because people tend to want to help right now and then forget about it. And this is something that they're going to need help with forever, for a long time. We're just at the scratching the surface, right, of the COVID-19 ramifications. So hopefully, even when the season gets going, I can go maybe like a couple times a month still. So it's been fun. It's really cool to do, to do something rather than just giving money is nice. But one, I'm not a millionaire. I don't have the kind of money that's really going to impact. And two, doing something kind of makes you feel good with your day a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too, because there's people in all different corners. Some people don't have time, but they do have money. Some people don't have money, but they do have time. There's a lot of ways to help. And sometimes it's just simply amplifying groups like this. The food bank near me that I try to help support is Second Harvest of Southern Wisconsin. There's a lot of Second Harvest food banks, and I think they all pretty much come up if you go to the site Eno mentioned, feedingamerica.org, and you search for something in your area. And one other thing that people worry about is they say, well, if I'm going to give money, I want to make sure it's used in the best way possible. You can look at a site like Charity Navigator and just verify that the charity you're supporting or the group you're supporting does, in fact, use resources effectively. So that's always another way to kind of make sure that your dollars are going as far as they possibly can and making as much of an impact as they possibly can. But those numbers are staggering, and they could easily be even worse than reported. I mean, I think we've seen pictures on social media from all different cities of people just lining up because they simply don't have food right now. And at, I think, a time of year especially where I always feel very fortunate. My family's never worried about where our next meal was going to come from the time I was a little kid through adulthood, right? If I go to a grocery store, I'm not worrying about what I'm putting in the cart. And it's an amazing privilege. It's an amazing amount of luxury just in that alone. And just to be able to help people, especially this time of year, but at any time of the year, with food in particular, is something that's just really important to me.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll be a little better on doing spotlights in the future, but I think this is a perfect time to do it, a perfect time to give outside of your family and to think about people who are less fortunate right now. Like you said, it's either, you know, money or time. Those are the two things you can give. Hopefully you have one of those. not everyone has one of those though, but it seems like with COVID we're inside a lot more. It seems like I've got all the time in the world.
Yeah, time. So some days it just drags, other days like feels like it goes by in an hour because the days are so similar, right? That Groundhog's Day thing that a lot of people are feeling is very real. Hopefully you can find a group near you to support if you're able to do that this holiday season. We had some great baseball questions that came in through the mailbag. One really good one that I think is kind of a central topic to today's show. And it was a question about in-game video room access and teams that lost WRC Plus from 2019 to 2020. The email came from one of our listeners, Matthew. He wrote, I wonder if there's any correlation between teams with fairly stable rosters that underperformed offensively in 2020 and the lack of in-game video usage, mainly the teams that I wonder able are bolded in the table below. He sent us a really good visual with this. The Cubs, the A's, the Astros, the Twins, the Brewers, and the Diamondbacks were the ones he flagged. Do you have a sense of which teams relied more heavily on in-game video rooms in 2019? And have you heard anything about this being available again in some capacity in 2021? So let's take the first part of that question first. Do we have a good gauge of this, or is this the type of thing that is very individualized to players, even though you would see significant drops in team performance from year to year? If your best player lost a lot of offensive production, that would impact your overall team number from year to year if you're using WRC Plus as a measure. If either of you heard anything about teams as a group, because everything I have seen so far has been isolated to specific players. JD Martinez and Javi Baez are the first two that always come to mind when this topic comes up.
I did a piece with Andrew Baggerly about the opposite side of this table. The Giants had the Giants and the Padres are in the top five too, But the Giants, with a 31-point change in their WRC+, had the second biggest offensive turnaround year by year of any team since 1974, since free agency started. So, you know, the answer for the Giants ended up being, you know, some personnel changes, some changes in coaching, some just regression to the mean for their guys like Belt and Crawford and Longoria just sort of returned to a little bit to normal. But one thing that did stand out is the coaching process changed. The hitting coach changed and the coaching process changed. And when I asked the hitting coach there, Donnie Ecker, to describe, you know, what's their mantra? Like, what is it that he wants? And he said, I want Brandon Belt. If you ask Brandon Belt after the ninth inning, or you ask Donnie Solano during batting practice, or you ask this guy at a different time, like I want them to all say that the thing that we do best is get them information that they need at the right time. And so that comes to mind as relevant when you're talking about not having this video, right? So the Giants may have found some way to get timely information to their batters without having video nearby. I don't know if I'm not suggesting that they sort of skirted the rules, but maybe they just had a good process in place to get information to their players, and that process was independent of in-game video. And maybe other teams were more reliant on the in-game video. I mean, just seeing the Astros at the top is kind of instructive, perhaps, even though they lost some key players and, you know, Jose Altuve just had a bad year, maybe health related. So there's so much going on in a team number that, like, I don't want to, like, just be like, aha, you know, you know, the Astros weren't cheating anymore. So that's why. But, you know, the cheating thing was, you know, it wasn't like last year, you know, so. I don't know. I would say the real answer is it's complicated when you talk about things on a team level.
Yeah, I agree. That's not like a singular, oh, this is the reason why, because some of the teams like the Pirates and the Rangers are 2 and 3 behind the Astros. Are they what we consider the analytic forefront?
Like we know the Rockies like don't have an analytics department and they were like 5th or 6th.
Right. You know? Yeah. And then on the flip side, the Phillies, I've heard some things about how like they've really struggled analytically, and they're in the top 5 in terms of with the Giants in terms of the positive side. So to me, there's some weird, like you said, this isn't a equals B scenario. It's like A equals B plus take into account C plus you got the factor of D here. The coaches is interesting because the Padres too, right behind the Giants, have had great success. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with some of the coaches they brought in. Bobby Dickerson, their infield coach, was named Baseball America's Coach of the Year. Mm. I think he's an underrated guy and what he's able to do. Obviously, having Fernando Tatis, Manny Machado is going to make you look good as an infield coach. But I do think that the Padres have a good system in place in terms of that kind of stuff. This is a fascinating question, though, and I feel like Eno's mind is just churning with all the potential mm-hmm. articles that something like this could turn out. I am not a numbers person at all, but looking at this chart, it's fascinating to me. The teams that are just the Nats and Red Sox are just like a straight zero. Like, I would have thought there would have been some maybe drop off for the Nats because they went from the World Series to last place. Mm-hmm. But again, it just shows you how kind of fickle the playoffs are and how. Really, were the Nats the best team in 2019? No. Does anyone think they were the best roster in 2019? Clearly not. It's just interesting to see the teams that are right around that zero mark. The Yankees -1, the Cardinals -1. You know, there's a lot to digest and a lot of ways you can analyze something like this.
I don't even think that it makes sense on just like a player level. Like, I can't make sense of it. On a player level, because even the names that you mentioned, Baez and Martinez, like, you know, I was trying to like sort of think through like how would I see this statistically? Like, what would we see in the stats based on them not having in-game video anymore? And, I don't know. I thought maybe it would be, where's the strike zone? Like, what are these balls that this umpire is calling balls and strikes, you know? And so I thought you might be able to see it in reach rates or in zone swing rates or something like that. But neither Baez nor Martinez had like a terrible year when it came to reach rates. So I don't know what it is. I really doubt that they're making a swing adjustment in game. So the other thing that would be to get another look at the pitcher's stuff. And I guess that would be the primary effect, is sort of, relive the at-bat after you had the at-bat and be like, oh, this is what he did in this order. This is what his curveball looks like. You know, maybe I can spot something in his fingers, in his release point that will like clue me into this, and give me a better shot in the next at-bat. But I don't know how to prove that then. I guess maybe we could look at third time through the order, if there was a drastic difference last year than before. Like, if third time through the order was way worse last year than it ever was before. But at the same time, like, teams are not letting their pitchers go third time through the order as much, you know? So, like, there are league trends that are kind of going to mess with any numbers, too.
Yeah, and I wonder if this comes back to more of an Occam's razor sort of explanation, where it's just like, 2020 was just weird, and not having in-game video, sure, that was the thing that those players were most bothered by. That was different. At least that was the way they answered questions when asked about their performance. But it maybe wasn't just that. Like, sure, that was a factor, but I don't know if people are generally well-equipped to describe all the specific things about this year that made this year hard for them. Whether you're a professional baseball player or not.
Yeah, right.
Like I was kind of talking about earlier, right? Like, just me not playing pickleball anymore is having this weird impact on me. Not because like pickleball keeps me really fit, but because it's seeing a handful of people I like and relaxing for a couple of hours outside, and just all of those things. Like, everybody's got a bunch of things that are different about this year. How each of those things are interacting to mess with us over the course of 2020 is really hard to calculate. And then now we're talking about, you know, baseball players who are, despite our best efforts, also still very difficult to predict year to year anyway.
Right, because they aged, right? Baez and Martinez aged. They're a year older. So there's age. There's an age effect. There's nobody in the stands. So there's like an intensity effect. You know, we had that thing about spring training B game level intensity, you know? So, there's all these different effects that it's really hard to tease out any one thing and say, this is it. Like, I just had this piece about popularity, and you can't even define popularity, even though baseball is like the most metric out sport. You know, any metric for popularity, Fangraphs clicks, jersey sales, Google Trends, they all have, weird little foibles to them that make them not perfect for judging popularity. Like, jersey sales, almost all of them have a transaction effect. Think about Gerrit Cole joining the Yankees. He's going to sell more jerseys just because it's a new Yankee. It's a new Yankee, you know, a new jersey, a new player on your team that's a star that got, you know, a lot of money was spent on him. So there's this transaction effect. Even if you look at Google Trends, you know, you look at Anthony Rendon, like, he's not clicked all year, and then he's clicked, you know, a bunch right before he signs or around after he signs. So, you know, it's one of the things that's hard, actually, about, you know, trying to do anything with analytics or numbers, is that most of the time, and I was just saying this to somebody, most of the time, your articles just end with a big shrug emoji.
A lot of things I do end with a big shrug emoji.
2020 is going to end.
Yeah, like, what was this year? What just happened? I don't know for sure. I just don't want to do it again. Do you guys want to do a trivia thing real quick? I just came up with a really great trivia, fun, random game we can play. So, again, I know you both love trivia so much.
So bad at it.
I would like it better if I was better at it.
Yeah, right.
All right, this one will not take long. This will be very quick.
My brain.
You guys can team up on this one. You can just go back and forth. Three wrong answers ends the game. There are 49 players, I think, in Yankees history who have worn number 45. And you named one, but you can name them again to get the first one.
I don't know anything about jersey numbers.
Well, it's just,
I don't
let's
either.
Just take a brief trip down memory lane for the Yankees.
All I know is that Rivera was 42.
Right, before we just talked about one guy who sold a bunch of jerseys because he wears number 45 for the Yankees.
Was Reggie Jackson 45?
All those old guys were like singular numbers, weren't they?
Reggie Jackson was everyone who watched Reggie Jackson play in that era furious. 44.
Oh, you were close. I thought they were more singular numbers.
I thought you were making fun of me.
No.
Andy Pettit.
Yo, that's a good one.
Nope. Pettit.
Andy Pettit?
Andy Pettit or number 46.
Gosh. You can't kill us.
This is outrageous.
All right, we're going to be wrong.
Can we get a plus three, like either direction?
Roger Clemens?
Roger Clemens.
No,
no, I don't think Clemens wore 45. Roger Clemens.
49 people wore this damn number, and we can't come up with one. Like, give us
Mike
credit if we
Mussina.
Come up with one. Yeah, Mike Mussina.
Mike Mussina.
Well, the guy currently wearing it and currently selling jerseys. No, it's not Mike Mussina. So you guys have missed three times
currently
already.
Wearing...
Garrett Cole wears 45.
Yeah. Oh, well, I...
We
here's my funny point about Yankees jerseys, though, right? If you had bought any of the other previous Yankees jerseys of players wearing number 45, you'd have a Garrett Cole jersey right now. If you would have bought Luke Voigt's
right,
jersey.
Right, because there's no name.
There's no name on it. Sometimes I see people walking around with a nameplate on their Yankee jersey, and I just think, you got the wrong one. Like I feel really bad because you shouldn't have it on there, but maybe you want to clarify for everybody whose jersey you're actually wearing, because you don't want people to think you're wearing a Chazen Shreve jersey. You want people to know you're wearing a Garrett Cole jersey.
I have to tell you, though, I find it super annoying as a writer, and nobody cares about writers, but it's really, really terrible as a writer to be in spring training trying to cover a Yankee game or a Giants game and have no idea who number 99 is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you already don't know who these people are, and now you're trying to be like, well, he looks kind of tall, and where's that dang media guide? And, you know, sometimes a media guide doesn't even have... You know, the high number guys, because they just got called up for minor league camp or something. You're just like, then you have to be like, PR, sorry. So who's that out there?
Yeah. I mean, my greatest fear as a beat writer, and this has not happened yet, is that I will call someone the wrong name. Because sometimes guys sit in front of the wrong locker because they're talking to another guy. It's like my biggest fear, and it's not happened yet, that I'll go up to a guy and call him the wrong name.
Oh, who was it? I can't even remember because there were two relievers, but there were two relievers for the Padres, and one of them had the great mustache, the great like handlebar mustache. And I should have known who he was, and he was sitting in front of a rehabbing locker, and I said, how's the rehab from TJ going? And he's like, oh, I don't have not TJ yet. Oh my God, what? Have you talked to my doctor? And I was like,
oh my God.
Ah! That, no, I'm sorry. What?
I was thinking of Kevin Quackenbush randomly when you said that. I don't even know. Did Kevin Quackenbush have a mustache?
I think so.
Was it Heath Bell? Because that's all I think of when I think of like crazy Padres relievers.
No, yeah.
Both Quackenbush and Bell kind of had the same beard, like the very thick, not quite Santa Claus beard, but.
One of these guys had a Fu Manchu, like a handlebar. Fu Manchu.
Well, there's a trivia question for the listeners.
You know what, Eno?
Reliever.
Yeah. And you know what, Eno? Why haven't we ranked like best facial hair? I mean, we've gotten like really low in story ideas. Why has no one done like 10 best mustaches in baseball? People would love it.
God. If you know, if the offseason drags on, we come back. And there's nothing's happened, then I think we'll have to do something. I always think of Sal Fasano, which, you know, that's an Orioles great right there.
Yeah. I'm telling you, people would love, because they would just go in there and be like, oh, you missed this guy. Oh, what about this
you
guy?
You idiots! Clearly the best mustache belongs to
exactly.
Yeah,
we had Daniel Mangden around here in these parts. He always had the kind of the Raleigh fingers thing going.
Yeah, well, Hunter Harvey with the Orioles looks like Kenny Powers. He's got the Kenny Powers mullet going on.
Whoa.
And everything. Yeah, he's bounding down. Yeah,
he's leaning into the reliever aspect of his job now. Going full reliever.
Best all-time facial hair by org. So each writer could have to dig into their choice. I think you have to have some ground rules for, well, you got to choose carefully, right? If you have a guy, relievers move around a lot. Sometimes relievers are the guys that have the best facial hair. So you got to use teams correctly. It's sort of like the Project Goat, where you want to make sure you use every team once, but you don't pull the wrong player from the wrong team the wrong year. Think about this. This could be a big story.
I'm telling you.
And all these lists, Brian Wilson keeps coming up. And I have to tell you, man, I always thought Brian Wilson's beard was so weird. Because it looked like he put shoe black polish in it or something. It looked like a toupee. It looked like a face toupee.
Like it looked gunky, like it had just like goo
in
it.
Yeah, like he dyed it. Yeah.
It looks like he dyed it. His eyebrows are brown and his beard is black. I never understood it, man. And then I had this whole interview with him where I was like, basically like, dude, I don't get it. Like, what's going on here?
And wasn't his beard a big thing?
No, I meant the whole thing, just the whole way he acted. And he's like, dude, it's an act. And I was like, really? You're going to tell me this on the record? He's like, yeah, it's an act. He's like, if I go out there and act out crazy and throw the ball and look like I'm throwing it super hard, and then it comes out at 45 miles an hour, I'll get a whiff. We were talking about his knuckleball, but like, you know, it was like, oh, I now understand closing so much better.
A lot of confidence in that.
The Kimbrel arm thing is just like, they're looking at your weird arm instead of thinking about what pitch is coming next.
A classic distraction.
That's why Soto does the shuffle. He said is in the minor leagues, he would be so distracting that these guys in AA would be like, oh, cool, fastball down the middle. Because what the hell is this guy doing in the box?
Yeah.
That works.
And I think it works, man. Yes. And it's also like, it's such a like, is he celebrating a take? Like, I could see like a pitcher being like, what? Black Guerrero has done that a couple times too, where he does like a little shimmy after he takes. But I was also just thinking about Papelbon's little like thing he did with his mouth. Like, isn't that weird? Don't you remember?
Yes, that was terrible. Weird. But by the way, let us know if you're listening to this if you would read a story about facial hair, because I'm willing to bet that a lot of people have strong opinions about this.
All right, let's get weird. That's for the Let's Get Weird channel.
And I've said this before too. That's Levi Weaver's bat signal. When that thing lights up, like Levi's there in 5 minutes. Like he's that's his jam. But I think you're gonna find some writers that dig out their old baseball cards and really do some significant research on this too, because you can find some classic facial hair back in those 70s and 80s baseball cards.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's get to another topic. We learned this week that the Cleveland baseball team is kind of going the way of the Washington football team. They're going to change their name, finally. And instead of going down the why'd this take so long conversation rabbit hole, which we certainly could do, it took forever, it shouldn't have taken this long, I figured we could have a little more fun with it and say, hey, what should they call this team? It's an opportunity to rebrand and be something new. So I'm curious what you guys think. Have you had any names that you think are great fits as Cleveland chooses a new name for its baseball franchise?
The Rocks. I'm all in on the Rocks because of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I know it sounds like Rockies. However, there's the Red Sox and the White Sox, and no one says anything about that, right? Like, okay, there's still a distinction. People are all about the Spiders. I don't really understand. That team was terrible. They used to have a team called the Cleveland Spiders, right? They were terrible.
There's also some like we wouldn't want like there's a legacy there we wouldn't want to reward. I didn't know all about this, but like the owners of the Cleveland Spiders also owned the Cardinals back in the day, or the whatever the team was in St. Louis back in the day, and they sent all their best talent from the Spiders to the St. Louis team. So they own two teams and like collected and colluded with themselves. And they were banned as owners, you know, and the whole practice of syndicate ownership was banned. So, like, we would be rewarding, like, a weird legacy of this group. Otherwise, I mean, wow. I'm a big fan of, like, you know, David Bowie, Spiders from Mars. The Spiders, you know, I think kind of could have some cool mascot situation. But, you know, why not? You know, I think more Clevelandy could be, like, the Forest Cities. That was one of their early names that doesn't have the same sort of bad background. I like rocks, man. I lean into this whole Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and have maybe some sort of allegiance with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Maybe have like a little area, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame area in the stadium. Like, you know, have like a real premium on your walk-up songs, and you know what I mean? Like, maybe like rock out, like, you know, like have some, you know, some like really allegiance to that. Have a lot of musicians throwing out first pitches and stuff. I don't know. I think you could really have some fun with it.
I think you just for free offered them a slogan that they're going to pay a lot of money for an ad agency to come up with. Rock out. Like
Cleveland rock.
That's
out.
Just what yeah. It's going to be, right? It's going to be on shirts and everything. It feels like you could market that brand like a minor league team. It does have kind of a cool, laid-back, fun vibe to it. I think some of the visuals you might kind of think of would be the Nashville Sounds, right? They're kind of similar in that regard, but being country music and everything. So you could actually, that wouldn't be the worst affiliation ever. I know they've got Columbus very close by, so they won't make that move. But it's just one of those weird things where it's like, what really defines Cleveland? And the first thing I always think of is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So I don't have a problem with Rocks and Rockies being in Major League Baseball together. I think they're different enough. I'm curious if there's any other off the wall or really good historical names that I hadn't thought of, because when this happened in D.C., the Washington football team, one of the logos that I saw that was kind of popped out there on Twitter by a designer was for the Washington Red Tails. And that was in reference to a group of pilots from World War II, pilots. Predominantly Native American pilots, too. So it was actually a name that was a fitting tribute, too. And it just seemed like a great way to step forward and do something really good with that name change. But I think it's interesting, too, because these teams that have kind of gone kicking and screaming about not changing and rebranding, from a business standpoint, you're going to sell a ton of merch. It always baffled me. It's like, you don't want to do the right thing for the sake of doing the right thing, but right. You don't want to do it to just make money. Like, that's like who these people generally are at their core.
That's why you have 30 alternate jerseys, right? Because they want people to continue to buy stuff, right?
That's true.
And that's also why when they announced this change, they said they weren't going to do it right away. You know, they want to let the current merch sell out.
Right, you got to buy the current merch top dollar
first.
They want
to like put a sunset date on it, right, before it's gone. And also, I was thinking, you know, you're talking about like focus groups. You know that, like, you know, they're undergoing the process. They've got McKinsey involved and blah 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 blah. And one of the things I think that happens when you do that is that you kind of go towards the most boring outcome. You know what I mean? I think that I'm looking at a name right now. The Forest Cities were called the Cleveland Blues back in the day. And, you know, with the Reds, you know, in the same place. And also, if you think about it, like, aren't like 90% of jerseys either blue or red?
A lot of them are, yeah.
It seems like it. Yeah. That's why the Padres jerseys
are so cool. Remember
the
Padres changed, you know? But they changed to blue. And even the Diamondbacks used to have like a cooler uniform, and they kind of changed to that Sedona red, right?
Yeah, the old purple ones, like the Randy Johnson era Diamondbacks.
Yeah, those are long gone.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that's left is really the Marlins psychedelic situation. And, you know, I'm into it. I'm into weird, man. They got rid of the home run sculpture, even though, I mean, it was ridiculous, but it was funny. So my guess is Cleveland Blues, man. I like Cleveland Rocks, but I think it'll be the Cleveland Blues.
The Cleveland Blues.
That's good, too. Anything but, like, people are saying, like, Cleveland Buckeyes, and it's like, no, Ohio State already has that. You don't, like, you don't share.
No.
Don't you guys feel like that's terrible? Like, you don't share monikers.
No.
Where they change it to the Cleveland team.
The Cleveland baseball team. Yeah.
It's like, geez. I mean, if that's what you're doing, you might as well name them the Cleveland Cavaliers, because they right. butt up to the NBA stadium and then just everyone could buy whatever they want, right? Like, that's ridiculous.
I do think it's interesting if you look at some of the markets in North America that have multiple sports in one city, the Pittsburgh franchises largely overlap in look, right? The Pirates and the Penguins and the Steelers all have that black and gold color scheme. And it's just kind of interesting that they've all just done that historically, and it works for all those teams. Like, those uniforms are all still pretty iconic within their respective sports. I guess the Pirates maybe a little less so, but for all the things that we rip on about the Pirates, the uniforms and the branding's actually good. Like, the Pirate stuff's cool. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the pirate theme is actually a lot of fun. You can lean into that quite a bit. But yeah, the Cleveland Buckeyes, like, I can't get on board with that one.
I guess Bucks and Brewers have slightly...
The Bucks change their colors and uniforms like every 3 years. Like, they are constantly changing. I mean, they were red and green for a while. They were green and purple.
Yeah.
Now they get the cream stuff in there because Milwaukee's the cream city. I think they're finally getting it closer to right. Like, they're figuring out their identity now. It's... I like the really old school stuff. The deer with the basketball is my favorite Bucks logo by far. I think
that's
they should
true.
Stick
that's
with
a
that.
Good one.
That's an all time.
Well, even if it is boring, Cleveland Blues has a fun. You know, the Ohio Bowl or whatever, the Cincinnati Cleveland games, Reds versus Blues. Like, you know, there's a little bit of a you know, the thing going on there. It'd be all right, you know.
Well, they got the Blue Jackets in Columbus for the NHL team too, so maybe it's a little too similar to that.
Mm. Yeah, but they also have the St. Louis Blues in the NHL, and they didn't have a problem with Blue Jackets and Blues.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. So I don't know. By the way, you know it's a slow hot stove when we've talked about like the cornucopia of facial hair, and we've also hit like now
food,
now
facial hair, and now team names and jerseys.
We work with what
someone
we're given.
Do something.
Yes.
Make a move.
There was one move that we didn't talk about in the last episode because it happened after we were done recording.
What was that?
Rafael Montero got traded.
Yes, a reliever trade.
To Seattle. Well, he's maybe going to close. I mean, I think Jose Leclerc, now that he's healthy again, opens the year probably as the Rangers closer.
With Jonathan Hernandez waiting in the wings.
Yep. So I think
to take his job.
That one to me is pretty straightforward. And all year last year, we kept saying, who's going to close for this Mariners team? I think they've at least positioned themselves to have an obvious first answer with Montero. So that's kind of fun, I guess, but it's not the action we were looking for. I mean, Mike Zunino went back to the Rays, so my dream of JT Realmuto signing there has officially been crushed. I don't think they're going to allocate resources that way, and the Rays are getting close to a deal with Michael Wacha. And, you know, it's funny because now we have reached the point where a lot of people on baseball Twitter immediately say, it's the Rays, so we must like this move, right? Like, it's the stock answer. But, you know, didn't you point something out with Wacha on this show with Stuff a while back? We were talking about potentially undervalued pitchers, and he actually came up. I forget what specifically you were searching for that dug him up, but he was kind of like one of the last names that you mentioned. Like, oh, Michael Wacha's on here too. And we both kind of shrugged, and we're like, maybe he's a multi-inning reliever now, and it's that's the right way to go, and that's the reason to do it.
His velo was up.
So the velo club. There you go.
He's in the velo club. In September, his velo was 94.4. In the beginning of 2019, it was below 93. So, you know, he's always had that four-seam change. And the one thing about the Rays is they'll take a guy to be three or four inning guy. That's a two-pitch guy that can get through the lineup twice, you know, and that's what they're going to do with Michael Wacha. You know, they only need to barely nurse a guy to the fifth inning. And I guess they figured they could do that with Wacha just as well as Morton, and then do it for cheaper. But, I mean, Morton is better than Wacha.
A lot better.
Even at the reduced velo.
Yeah.
So sometimes it feels like they're being a little cheeky.
I mean, the Realmuto market, though, as you mentioned him before, because he's not going to the Rays, is fascinating to me. Like, in an age where we're not sure what teams are going to spend. Like, what I think the Nationals make sense for him, but I don't think they're spending that kind of money. So I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know what they, the Mets obviously added McCann and their team who, you know, maybe could have spent that kind of money. Like, wait, does he just end up back with the Phillies? Like, I don't know. Are they spending money? I thought, yeah, like, right? It's a fascinating, his Trevor Bauer is going to get paid, I feel like. I don't know if it's a 1-year deal or longer, but the Robuto market to me is fascinating to kind of look at and say, like, who's going to spend, right? Toronto, we know, is asking everybody, like, to prom, right? Like, they're engaged with everybody, but no one's really ready to commit. I'm just not sure, like,
and like I pointed out, the Toronto actually has by OPS the number one projected catcher in baseball, Alejandro Kirk, dude. I don't know what it is. Steamer has him projected for the best OPS in baseball. So I just don't see the need as being that strong to kind of go to $120 million. You know, I think Springer would be a better fit for the Blue Jays if they're going to spend that kind of money. And I think that you look around, and I think you're totally right. The Nationals, it's like the DJ LeMahieu market, where you're like, the most obvious market for DJ LeMahieu, other than the Yankees, is the Cardinals and the Nationals. The most obvious market for Real Muto, other than the Mets, is the Phillies and maybe the Astros. You know, that's where I think the Astros might actually sign him. But for LeMahieu, I don't think the Cardinals and Nationals are spending any money. You can put the Nationals on the Real Muto level too. It's like they could make a huge upgrade to their infield, and I just don't think that they're going to spend money. So that's why I have, you know, Real Muto going to the Astros for like $80 million or $85 million with an option.
I mean, what do you think, Derek? I mean, I just, that particular player to me is fascinating to watch it unfold, because it's not like Harper and Machado where you're like, all right, they're going to get paid eventually. It just might take till March. I don't know if Real Muto gets that $100 million. DJ LeMahieu is going back to the Yankees. I feel like this is just posturing on posturing. Eventually, he's going back to the Yankees. Just a waste of time until then.
It seems inertia. Yeah, it just seems like it's where he's going. He wants 100. They want 80. They'll give him 80 with an option that looks like 100.
I'm on the Astros or Phillies at this point for Real Muto. Process by elimination, right? But my dark horse went right back to the old friend in this case, with Zunino going back to the Rays. The Angels, I thought, could have added Real Muto. I know they like Max Stassi, and they seem like they're comfortable with what they have at catcher.
They're so obvious their need is pitching, and all their moves so far have been for pitching.
Yeah. The other player, we haven't talked about him a lot as a nice free agent who's available, and he's coming off a down shortened season in 2020, is Marcus Semien. And one of the fears I had about Semien as 2020 approached was that he maxed out everything in 2019. He had an amazing 2019 season, was a finalist for the MVP award, and even like literal playing time, he maxed out. There was nowhere for him to go but down, and the shortened season was bad on top of the step down that he was certain to take. I keep looking around at possible fits there, and the Reds, I think, are the team that come up as the most obvious, or the team that's been linked to wanting to add a shortstop. But there aren't that many teams looking for help at that position right now. If you kind of scroll through, shortstop's a young position, right? It's a franchise building spot for a lot of teams. I almost wonder if he's going to go right back to Oakland after a long wait. You know, if he's not going to get 4+ years from a team like the Reds, and the Reds are doing some weird stuff, kind of paring down payroll, trying to save in the bullpen, that makes me doubt that they're actually going to go after Semien, barring a massive discount.
Yeah, and the thing about Semien is, you know, he's 29 years old, and there was only one qualified shortstop above 30 years old last year. It's a young position. So, you know, Didi Gregorius, Brandon Crawford was that guy, if you want to know. Didi Gregorius is 30. Marcus Semien is 29. Semien's outs above average. His advanced stats for defense suggest that he's one of the worst shortstop defenders already. So, you know, I think that, like, teams are like, am I going to give you a 4-year deal to be a shortstop when I think you might be a shortstop for one of those years? And what kind of team is in that position to be able to do that? So I actually could see, you know, the Reds are in a good spot where they can just be like, I've got a 3-30 deal out there, you know, to the shortstop that wants to take it. If it's Simmons, if it's Didi, if it's Simeon, whoever it is, we're not going to move off this deal. We're not going to add to it. This is the deal. Whoever takes it, takes it. And then I could see the A's saying, we've got a 2-20 deal for whoever doesn't take the Reds deal. So, you know, the Reds will end up with, I mean, the A's will end up with Simmons or Didi or Simeon on a deal that's good. Also, the A's have shown that they're willing to kind of put bad defenders in certain spots and try to kind of use positioning to get the most out of them.
Yeah. I you're right with the shortstops, though. It's a short list. It's actually, and you look at the market next year, too, and the shortstop market is going to be insane. Like, there's just not a lot of teams that need shortstops. And then you look and there's some really high-end ones who could be available very soon, including Lindor, obviously, whatever happens with him. I feel like there's been no buzz on that at all, right? Well, there's been no buzz on anything because clearly we're talking about mustaches for 10 minutes. There's been no buzz, but there's just...
Stove's broken.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know what you guys think. I mean, this is probably a long conversation, but why not shorten it to a month? I know it's not the NBA. I know it's not the NHL where they can't do like 2 days of signing and it's over. But just think about how condensed a month would feel, right? It would still be action-packed. We'd still have a month to talk about the awards in November. And then you'd still have time to talk about rosters and like spring training previews. Just a month would change the whole offseason.
Well, I wish what they would do is sort out who is actually a free agent quickly after the World Series. That way your non-tenders don't get dumped into the market much later than players with team options that are due a few days after the World Series. But if you wanted to say...
Yeah, options and tenders should be like the same.
They should be the same.
I mean, maybe it's a lot of work for the front office, though, right?
Squeeze like, it, make them both like 10 days or 14 days, but like make them the same.
Yeah, get them closer together.
Yeah, yeah. If you said, okay, 14 days after the end of the World Series, you got to make these decisions. And then we're going to have a moratorium on signing and trades until the winter meetings begin. We all immediately can go on autopilot for 3 weeks in terms of not expecting moves. Good. Maybe we could even schedule baseball writer vacations.
Yeah, and it's
a
good point that Britt makes that there's still content. There's still content to be made by you can have award season.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So we just switch over to writing about award stuff for a month. How weird is it to like have a manager of the year possibly go to a guy that was fired?
Yeah, how weird is it to have manager of the year overshadowed by a really early signing in the offseason or a trade too, right? I mean, if you want to make your events stand out, don't randomly overlap them.
Yeah.
There's an episode of Seinfeld where George says, if you take everything I did in my life and condense it down into one day, it looks decent. I feel like if you do... It's the one where he pretends he's new in town and he's dating the tourism guide. That's what he's trying to do. And she's like, this city will eat you alive. It's a great episode. But if you condense this entire MLB offseason so far into, you know, 1 week.
Into one day.
1 day, 1 week. It's good. It's fun. It's exciting. It's a lot. It's like MLB just took over for a week instead of MLB just sort of dumped a few things in randomly and got overshadowed by everything else. So I do think following the lead of the NBA, and you know stuff's happening behind the scenes during that moratorium, but you can't announce these moves. Then you kind of have this thing to look forward to. You're like, okay, now the window's open. Now these moves are going to start happening. Now we're going to work on reaction pieces, and we're not going to get caught up in manager of the year and rookie of the year and all those awards. I think that's a change that they really should consider.
I do too. I mean, that's my solution to make baseball a little more exciting in the winter. Just a month. Still a long time for teams. Still a long time for agents to negotiate and do their back and forths. Because like you said, they're doing it behind the scenes anyway. Just pick a month. I don't know what month that would be. Would it be December with the holidays? Would it be January? I don't know. I haven't nailed that part down, but
I think they want the winter meetings to continue to be a big deal. I think if that's the case, then that's when you open the floodgates. That's when you say this is happening. And then it's already a media event, right? They already have around the clock coverage for 5 days from that event.
Then your MLB Network hot stove at the winter meetings thing has a lot to talk about in the first day because they're just coming through. And then it becomes like a thing. Oh, I got to turn it on. Like this is the first day that like they can announce anything. So that like the first day of the winter meetings, and that would combat the whole problem that we have that everyone's trying to just wait out. They're trying to negotiate like an a-hole, really, and just wait it out and wait it out and wait it out. And so, you know, yes, okay, like Bryce Harper doesn't sign anymore on the first day of the winter meetings. At least you get like the kind of veteran signings, the low-level veteran signings and some of the trades. You get that on the first day. You know, because I don't know personally how you can force a team to sign Bryce Harper on the first day, unless you just make the transaction window like really short. But I think that doesn't work either.
If you took the first 2 days of this week and said that was the first day of the winter meetings, that's at least something. You had Hunter Renfroe going to Boston, you had David Dahl going to Texas, you had the James McCann deal with the Mets, and you had that small trade we talked about where Rafael Montero got flipped.
And then even all the stuff that happened before that. I mean, there's been some stuff, you know? So the Drew Smiley signing, all that
stuff.
Adam
Eaton went to a team. Like, yeah, like that's a lot of stuff when you start to add it up. It's the Costanza.
Yeah, it's the Costanza thing.
It's true.
It looks pretty decent if you just condense it down a little bit.
And you're right, you know, no one signs Bryce Harper the first day, but you know what else is super exciting? The last day. The down-to-the-wire midnight move that gets made, because otherwise he gets docked or the team gets fined or whatever they come up with to make it that you have to do it in that period. Mm. How exciting is that? And then we're all exhausted, but then it's over. Then you can, like, go to the grocery store without your phone. You can do all these things knowing
like
that
a
it's
Christmas.
Done.
Yeah. Oh my God.
What if this window were 10 days? Or a fortnight. What if it started the Sunday night of the winter meetings and ended 2 Sundays later? Wow.
It would be great.
The transfer window.
The one thing I have to say, though, is what happens if your team loses a starter in spring training?
You could have some kind of special provisions for replacing players.
So you're saying, like, but you're not saying freeze the roster in December.
No, we're not freezing the roster entirely, but we're trying to do something.
Moratorium on free agent signings?
Yes. Right. Yes. And once spring training starts again, you could start making additions to your team. But like January, dead month. Maybe only minor league signings. I think people deserve it.
I think people deserve it. I think people on teams deserve it. You know, there's something about baseball that feels very 24/7, 365.
Yes. Agreed. So then teams, if we're talking like how we talked about teams don't have their budget set yet, teams would have to have their budget set because this is the period. This is it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think GMs might like it too, especially this year. Like, hurry up. What are
ownership.
We doing?
Tell me my number. I got to have it.
Yeah.
Like, in January, the team could be focused on amateur scouting and organizing things on that front more, right? As the college season's going to get underway and then spring high school seasons are a couple months off. Like, you could do this with a lot
February
of purpose.
Becomes more of an amateur scouting time,
Right, and you're allocating resources within organizations a lot more effectively. It seems like there's a lot of ways to make this a win, and it's not just, we want transactions at this time. It's, well, let's do this better. I mean, that's the point. Like, just try and clean things up a bit when you can.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a... real POS. You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see,
this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
We got a lot of great email, as I mentioned earlier. One was about the cheesesteaks in the mail that we discussed last week. There actually is a service that will mail you a cheesesteak. And before you're like, gross, because that's what we all thought last week. It comes from Campos, which is underrated. This email came from Rob. They said the sandwich is made with peppers, onions, frozen on the side, sent in a foam cooler with instructions on time and temp to heat it up. So, I mean, that's about as authentic as you can do. It is out there. If you're interested, recommendations for cheesesteak places include the aforementioned Campos, Delisandro's, and Jim's Steaks. I won't tell people not to go to Pat's or Gino's, which I think I've seen on every food show ever, but in my opinion, there are better places. And that seems very reasonable, right? Those are the iconic places, but they're not necessarily the best places to go at this point. Rob also recommends Tired Hands Brewing for a tasty beverage. And
Tired Hands is great.
If we get sick of cheesesteaks in Philly, there's always the Nick's in the Reading Terminal Market. They have great roast pork and beef sandwiches. Thanks for all the work you do. Have a great holiday. Thank you for the email, Rob. I'm glad there is a way to, you know, if you left Philly and needed a cheesesteak, you actually can get one and not have it just be a sloppy mess when it shows up at your door. We got a Would You Rather for you guys. It's the Holiday Christmas Movies edition. I put them into two groups. There are about 8 Christmas movies I've seen a lot, and there are probably 5 or 6 really popular ones that I have either seen parts of, or I've seen once a long time ago, or I've never seen them at all. So we're going to start with ones I've seen the most. I'm curious what you would choose in this series of toss-ups. The Santa Claus or Miracle on 34th Street, and I'm talking about the 90s remake, not the original version of that film. We'll go to you first, Britt.
The Santa Claus, because I can recite the lines to that movie. It's hysterical.
it's completely ridiculous.
One of Tim Allen's best, maybe only. Out, like, besides Home Improvement, that's the only other time I can really say, like, great job, Tim Allen.
Yeah, he's one of those people that has a pretty loaded IMDb page of things that I certainly do not want to watch.
I'll take Santa Claus, too. I mean, I don't even know if I've seen Miracle on 34th Street, honestly.
It's a sweep for the Santa Claus in this case because I didn't like Miracle on 34th Street as a kid. I think I want to go back and watch the original one as an adult. I think I'll like that a lot better. It was just too serious and sad for a Christmas movie.
Yes,
for me as a
there's like a whole group of like kind of like American traditional holiday stuff that like I missed out on as a kid. Like I spent a lot of Christmases in Jamaica, or sometimes my mom would forget that stores were closed on Christmas, and we would eat dinner at the Waffle House.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So. That's the kind of Christmases I had. Getting off the plane in shorts. You know, I remember the blizzard of the century in Atlanta. We landed. There was like an inch of snow on the ground, and we were in shorts. We went straight to the Waffle House for dinner. So
an inch of snow.
The storm of the century. Inch of snow.
It was an inch of snow.
That's what they do here in D.C. We had a winter weather advisory, and I'm from New England. And so we got an inch of snow that melted. You could still see the grass. Like, come on.
Yeah, I remember they didn't even have any snow plows, so they had to like import them from like North Carolina or something. They're like, sorry, we can't get this up. Everything's canceled. And they're like, my car's driving just fine. I don't know. It's kind of slushy already. It's fine. Don't worry about it. But the kids were like, no, we got a snow day.
Yeah. Derek's like, that's spring in Wisconsin. An inch of snow? Cool.
Yeah. I mean, every other year it snows on my wedding anniversary in the middle of April. Like, that's just, it's life up here. It's just how it goes. We had the worst winter ever was 2 winters ago. That was the polar vortex year because we had an ice storm. Those are the worst. Like, ice storms are the absolute worst because your sidewalks, if you just want to take your dog out for a walk, are major trip hazards, and roads are actually like really bad. Like, one of the few conditions I don't want to drive in. I don't want to drive when it's icy. So we had an ice storm. Then we had a snowstorm, like an actual snowstorm, not an inch, like a legit like foot or so of snow that came down over the course of a few days. And then on top of that, we had the polar vortex where it got down to, I think the actual temperature bottomed out for a brief time at like minus 30 and the wind chill was minus 55. And there are parts of Canada where that happens every year. It was, the first time I'd ever been a part of that. And we took my dog. She wears boots when it gets really cold.
Is the snow freezing or something? Is the snow freeze then? And you're just like walking on top of the snow?
It makes it different. I don't really know how to describe it. But the hardest thing about that is for the 90 seconds I'd go outside to take the dog outside, the wind hits you in the face. And the only part of your body that's not covered are your eyes. The wind hits you in the eyes. Your eyes water. And the water that comes out of your eyes immediately freezes onto your eyelashes. It's that cold. And you're just like, oh my God, I am done if I don't get back inside in like 10
back
minutes.
Inside.
Like I am actually in some sort of danger. And I can't believe there are places that get that cold every year and people choose to stay there, because going through that once, I did not enjoy that at all. But like underneath all that snow was a nice sheet of ice too. So my neighbors were falling down. It was chaos. Just total chaos. Oh, yeah, don't drive anywhere in those conditions. Next toss-up. This one was in our group Slack. Not the three of us, but the company Slack. Home Alone or Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. I think there are people that believe the sequel is better than the original on this one.
Who?
Britt's disgusted by this question.
Well, I've seen these recently, the kids. And, I mean, there's the cat lady and, you know, there's... The bird lady, I guess.
She's a bird lady, yeah.
Bird lady. I was going to say.
Sorry.
Pigeon lady.
She has a name.
There's really? I don't know.
I think she has a name.
I don't know. I can't imagine. My point I wanted to make about these two movies is, holy crap, they're violent, dude. Do you, like, I was watching with the kids. I was like, kids, don't ever do any of this. And they're like, if the robbers come in the house, I'm like, no, call the cops. Don't do any of this.
your children aren't trained to shoot robbers in the face with a BB gun?
Yeah. And like, you know, like the paint can, like these are like, I was like, concussion, broken legs, concussion. This is pretty violent stuff.
The number of times that Harry and Marv would have actually died over the first two movies, probably double digits from the various things they suffered.
It's like flamethrower action. And like...
Yeah. Yeah. Home Alone 1, though, for me, it's a strong... The sequel never is as good.
No. There's that iconic scene with the... Yeah, he's not even home. Like, it's not home. He's not home. It's like a misnomer. Home Alone 2, he's in New York.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
It's not home. A franchise.
Yeah.
I will say it's accurate, franchise. Though, that guy treated him at the hotel desk like he couldn't possibly be in a hotel room. That was me my first few years on the beat at like 21, checking into these hotels. They'd be like, are you lost? There's like a Hotel 6 down the street. You'd be like, no, I work for MLB. And you're like, you know, I come strolling in like no makeup, probably looked about 15, you know. And they're like, you don't belong in these hotel rooms. Get out of here.
That's fine.
Is your mom or dad coming to check you in?
Yeah, pretty much.
Just had this random thought that Kevin McAllister is kind of like what I think Elon Musk might have been like as a kid, like playing with blowtorches and, you know, concocting these booby traps for people out of well-engineered things in his dad's garage. Like that just seems like something he'd have been up to back then. I'm on Home Alone 1. I think it's better. I don't think the sequel's unwatchable or anything. I think the sequel's fine. If you're into Home Alone 1, you're probably into Home Alone 2. As well. How about this one? A Christmas Story or Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? These are not very similar movies. It's hard to put them up against each other, but hey, you got to do what you got to do in these toss-ups.
It's an easy one for me. I am not into the sap and the cheese. I'm going Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I want it to be Christmas adjacent. Like, I'm like, you know, what's the big debate? Die Hard, is it a Christmas movie or not? I'm like, I don't care. I know which one I'd rather watch on Christmas. Die Hard or Christmas Story? Planes, Trains, and Automobiles or Christmas Story? I'm watching Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I want to laugh a little. I want it to be adjacent, is all I'm saying.
Oh, so you don't like any of the sappy holiday movies where they make it home just in time and they fall in love at the end. Basically, all my favorite holiday movies.
No, they can be weird. Like in the next one, there's a happy ending of one of them. And it's kind of sappy, but it's like a weird movie. So I like it. So I don't want to ruin the next one. But in this one, it's like sort of plain Jane versus, off the wall.
Wow, how dare you? I'm going to go with Christmas Story for the many scenes.
Sorry, also, I just offended you so bad.
Also, Fragile must be Italian. There's some great lines in A Christmas Story.
That's true.
Yeah, you'll shoot your eye out. I think my favorite line in that movie. So they're in line to see Santa Claus, and Ralphie and his brother Randy are standing in line alone at the department store. I forget what it's called in the movie, but the characters from The Wizard of Oz, which is fairly new to the period in which the movie is set, they come walking up to him, and I think it's the Wicked Witch of the West, and she comes up to him and she's like, "What a tasty little boy!" And instead of being like a normal kid, he just comes up with this thing that I probably would have done at 10 and goes, "Don't bother me, I'm thinking." and you see this very confused look on the witch's face as she walks away. That stuff's gold. Fragile, obviously great. The pink bunny slippers, I mean, that one's the one in my family that we watch the most, so that one's just kind of like unique to my Christmas Day experience, I guess, and I'm sure it's unique to a lot of people's Christmas Day experiences because it's on for like 48 hours at a time. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is good. If you haven't seen it, definitely worth checking that one out. This is another tough one for me, but I'm firmly on one side, so I'm curious where you guys are. Christmas Vacation or Elf? Because I think for some people, those come up as possible. This is my favorite Christmas movie. This is my favorite holiday movie. This is my go-to this time of year. Elf being a little more of the modern classic. Christmas Vacation now actually over 30 years old somehow. It's hard to believe that movie's that old, but I guess, we're all over 30 years old. So which side of that one are you on,
That was the preview. I think Elf has, they're both kind of off the wall here. And so I'm not totally anti-sap. I kind of like the way that Elf ends. And I think it's off the wall enough to keep my attention. And it's fun. Christmas Vacation is a solid choice. And we just watched it last night. This is actually the hardest one for me. I like both of these movies a lot.
Yeah, I agree. This is really tough because I love Elf. We do watch Christmas Vacation a lot. It's funny. I think Elf is more current funny. More like,
yeah,
this, like, Christmas Vacation is almost a little dated funny, right? Where you like know what's going to happen. Oh, the tree's going to light on fire. Oh, this is going to happen. Because you've seen so many of those movies by now. I understand it was so great back in the day. But for me, it's a solid second to Elf here.
See, I'm Christmas Vacation over Elf. Not because Elf isn't good, and I think it's coming back to what I like in a Christmas movie. I want to feel like a kid, and I think Christmas Vacation brings me back to that younger age. I don't know how and why that works and happens that way, but Elf is one of my favorite like modern Christmas movies, I guess we'll call them modern, like new in the last 10 or so years, because most of what I go back to is late 80s, early 90s this time of year. Again, you want to feel like a little kid on Christmas, I guess. And I'm very curious about Eno's Christmases, though, now. Like, those sound very different than mine. Like, mine were like a script every year. It was like, this is exactly what we're doing on Christmas. Yours sound a lot more fun and whimsical.
I guess. I mean, sometimes I would be super annoyed at Mom and be like, "Mom, I don't want to eat at friggin' Waffle House on Christmas. Can we, like plan next time?" and I tell you that Christmas in Jamaica was always very weird for me because, everyone else is talking about, being cold and by the fire. Maybe that's why I'm not that into that cheese, is it doesn't link up for me. I had maybe one or two Christmases by the fire. Mm-hmm. Most of the time I was at the beach on Christmas. So, you don't get that same kind of like roasty toasty and like, let's go watch A Christmas Story. And you know what I mean? Like, I just don't, it doesn't link up to my past the same way. So
different vibe. I was actually having a thought that Almost Famous is a low key Christmas movie in a strange way.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I like all the ones you guys probably haven't seen or don't enjoy, like The Holiday, Love Actually, all the rom-coms. Like, I'm there. I actually am not a rom-com person except for Around the Holidays. And then I'm like, oh my God, they're going to be reunited. So I watch a lot of those alone because there's only so much that my husband can take. So,
which of those is better? Which one would you choose between Love Actually and The Holiday?
The Holiday. Because Love Actually is a little too much on the cheese. The Holiday's got like this cranky little old man who's a terrific character who I love. And I really like Jack Black and Kate Winslet in that movie a lot. So, plus it's not all, it's, some of it is in California, you know, so it's not all like perfect snow everywhere. So it's, you know, I don't know. That's my favorite movie though. Watching it tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
Nice.
Those were in the section of movies I've generally either not seen at all or seen very little of. I also have White Christmas in there. I need to watch White Christmas just because it's White Christmas. How could you not? So I've got that up against Holiday Inn. I don't know if you guys have seen either of those. And then It's a Wonderful Life versus A Christmas Carol, which I've seen parts of It's a Wonderful Life scattered every holiday season forever, but I've never sat down and watched it start to finish, which is absolutely embarrassing in some ways.
Well, I share your embarrassment.
Third.
You know, the one of the things too about once you have kids, like you lose the chance sometimes to see some of these movies because a lot of times movie time, especially if it's a movie that I'm not super motivated to see, is get stuff done time.
Mm-hmm.
So you like turn the movie on, you watch the first little bit, and then you're like, oh, I've got to go clean the kitchen or get, you know, dinner started or, you know, all these other things that I put away because I was watching the kids, you know. Now the TV is watching the kids, and so now I'll go do these other things. But I will say that I have made some new like movie marathon type Christmas arrangements in the family, and we normally do like those are my kids screaming because
TV's watching them right now.
Yeah, no, I don't know what they're screaming about, but
they're playing Home Alone.
Yeah, right. We do movie marathons, but we do and before the kids, we did Predator movie marathons, Alien, you know, and now we've gone into more. Is this being handled? Now we're going into more. We do Harry Potter and The Hobbit as movie marathons. We're kind of like a movie marathon family. So it needs to have like, you know, four or five movies in there.
There's about five Home Alones that I will not acknowledge the last three. So beware of falling into that trap.
We saw three. It's not great.
Yeah. If you went beyond three, wow. Like, I feel very bad for you. But I understand.
I know my kids will find four and five, and I'm just like, I don't want to help them find it. I'm not going to bring it up.
Good choice. All right. Well, anything you guys are looking forward to in the next couple of weeks here with the holidays upon us? I mean, Britt, you do the Italian cookie thing just like my wife's family does. We spent all of Friday that night, Saturday, and Sunday just making cookies. I put the picture up on Instagram. It's like being in a bakery for 48 hours and just being an employee. It was a lot of fun, though, because it pays off. The hard work is fun, and it's a cool tradition to uphold.
Yep. Mine is tomorrow, actually, so it'll be a good time. But, yeah, that's what I'm most looking forward to, making them and then eating them, obviously. Mm-hmm. Getting the assortment on your plate because you make so many different kinds, and then you're able to just have this nice little variety plate and then just sitting and enjoying all my cookies and then later regretting why I ate so many cookies. It's like this, you know, cyclical thing.
they look like sugar cookies to me.
No, you didn't just do sugar cookies, did you, Derek? You did other things.
No.
Yeah, we do a lot.
Well, let's see. What are they called?
Ricotta cookies?
Anchonettes. Do you know Anchonettes? We do Anchonettes. Mm-mm. We do Italian nutballs. We do Austrian chocolate balls. We do snickerdoodles, sugar cookies, Russian tea cakes.
Wait a minute.
But even if they're sugar cookies, they're kind of like floaty. Are they like really soft?
Well, so the ones Brit's describing, those are more global. Those are like very generally very Italian cookies.
Which ones?
I'm looking at like a Google search. They look like kind of like small, but like are they like super fluffy, like fluffy Christmas, like fluffy sugar cookies?
No, I'm going to get to send you guys some just so you can try them in the future. I wish I would have planned for that this year.
Are there ones with ricotta inside?
No, we don't have any with ricotta. So the dough, dough is made from scratch, of course. We have some that are red, white, and green together, and they end up being like little rounds with some icing on top. And those are pretty, I don't even know what they're called. They're just the most Italian-looking cookies of all. We have some cookies.
Yes, what are those called?
I never really got a name on those.
Anisettes?
Maybe.
Yeah, aren't they? Yeah, we do those.
We have something called couplets, which are, they're like dough with a little bit of nuts, like crushed pecans that we roll them in. And then there's frosting, a little bit of frosting in the middle.
Almond.
Yeah, I don't think there's any almond in that one. Mm. We have tutus, which the tutus are pretty different. I've never seen anything quite like those before. I think they're like pillows with jelly. We have cheminus, which are like little, they almost look like little crackers with sesame seeds on them. So they're less sweet than the others. Those are good. Those actually pair really well with beer. And then we have some chocolate ones that are really good. So we've
like Nutella inside, like a little bit of chocolate filling.
No,
dipped the chocolate dipped ones.
We don't do those. Nope.
Oh, did you do the butter cookies? The Italian butter cookies.
Nope. those look.
We
good.
Do mini cannolis. There's like amaretto cookies.
Yes, I
do
see
too.
Mini cannolis.
So you do a lot of the ones that are on this main article that comes up. Ours are like the glazed Italian Christmas cookies, a soft cake-like texture. That's
there's a fig one.
The anisettes we definitely do, or anginettes is how I thought we said it. We don't do pizzelle.
Yeah, we used to have those in our family, and they don't make them anymore. I don't know why.
Yeah, we don't.
There's
do
a fig one called Chuchidadi or something.
Never done the fig one. We did something this year from the other side of the family. They're called butterhorns. And I've never seen butterhorns in a bakery before. If you go into an Italian grocery store, they'll have all the different cookies we make and a bunch more, a lot like the ones that Britt's describing. And butterhorns, they have two fillings. One's a prune filling, which is pretty different because you don't put prunes and stuff really anymore. But the other one is ground up nuts and brown sugar.
It almost looks like a pastry. Is it almost like a pastry? Like almost like a bread type thing?
No, they don't look like. I'm looking at the Google search results. I'll have to send a picture out of these. But anyway, I'm looking forward to eating all those because we spent all of last weekend making them. So what do you got, Eno?
I kind of want you to send me a recipe so that I can make them.
I'll send you some recipes.
They don't give me the recipe, so you got to get them from Britt. I don't even know the recipe. I'm just hands. I'm
you're
just
not allowed
to
know?
Not allowed to know. I'm married in. I'm not allowed to have the recipe. Not blood.
A lot of them, we had to, like 10 years ago, type them all up because they were handwritten on index cards from my grandmother, and they got so worn, and so you could barely read them. So we finally, handwritten them up, and my sister actually sent me some of them on email because, a lot of them,
I want those,
You couldn't, find.
Our food, the food situation I'm married into is we do enchiladas every Christmas. Then we'll do a why am I blanking on it? Chili, like a what's a pork with like you put basically with salsa and you put it in the
pork.
Put it in the slow cooker.
Carnitas.
Yeah, basically, but I'm blanking on that one. That I usually my wife does that one, but I do. Then I bring in the German stuff, so I'll do rack of lamb. I'll do some roasts, tons of mashed potatoes, and we're gonna do it up. We're ready to do some cooking.
Yeah, there's some really interesting traditions out there. We had a few people that emailed in to Scandinavian Christmas food. So that's what lutefisk.
it's
big in this part of the country.
I actually Googled lutefisk after that. I don't know that I'd be super excited to eat the lutefisk.
Yeah, dried whitefish.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with whitefish on on a bagel, but that's usually a little bit more like salmon or something, it's like salty and wet.
Yeah,
I don't know about the dried aspect of it.
Yeah, I think I'd pass on the lutefisk, but hey, if that's your tradition, I understand why you love it, because I love the traditions that my family has and the ones that I picked up joining my wife's family.
On one side, we have dried fish, and on the other side, we have tons of cookies.
it's really good if your two family traditions kind of blend well together. My mom always makes Buckeyes, the peanut butter and chocolate balls. You make little peanut butter balls, dip them in chocolate, put them in the freezer. Those are good. So we made a batch of those, and then we dug up an old recipe. My great-grandma made something she called polar bear cookies, which was white chocolate chips melted with some crunchy peanut butter mixed with mini marshmallows, Rice Krispies, and a little bit of crunchy peanut butter and peanuts. So it comes out to be just like a ball, but kind of like a Rice Krispie treat, but a little softer, a little more flavor going on. Those were really easy. They're a no-bake dessert, so if you're not very skilled in the kitchen, you could easily make them. And that's what this polar bear cookie. I'll send you guys the recipe for
that. What was the other one? The peanut butter one? Buckeye?
Oh, the Buckeye. Buckeyes. Yeah, the Buckeye. Yeah.
Buckeye.
Yeah.
We're doing a cookie exchange next year. We're going to start like a month ago, and we're doing a cookie exchange. Because if I send them to you now, the way the mail goes, you'll get them in February. So we're doing it next year.
The Black Friday cookie bake of 2021 is now on the calendar.
Yeah, we got to do it before the Christmas rush so that we can get the cookies before they're stale.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's our plan. See, it's good. Starting new traditions already for next season. Well, no matter what you're doing to celebrate this holiday season, I hope everybody out there has a great holiday. Britt, Eno, it's been awesome doing this show with you guys throughout the year. Looking forward to a great 2021. Hope you both have an awesome Christmas and New Year's.
Yes. It has been really, really a pleasure. And thanks, Britt, for joining our show this year. That has been a real positive step for us, I think. And it's been really fun to do these. And to all the listeners, thank you for listening and rating and reviewing.
Yes, we appreciate that. That's the small gift. If you want to give us a very small gift for this holiday.
And sending us emails, man. A lot of the times we need those emails to finish out to have enough content with no hot stove. But also it makes us feel like we have a community here that we're connected to, and we're all just trying to think about baseball and have interesting questions and go down weird rabbit holes.
Yes, it's been great, and hopefully 2021 will have much better, more positive, uplifting storylines to talk about.
Yeah, it has to, right? So stay healthy.
Yes.
Stay happy, everybody. We're back with you in 2021.
Thanks for listening.